Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris. And I'm remembering to look at the camera.
There we are. There we are. Oh, yeah. And this week on the weekly, Warframe RPG canceled. Mm-hmm. Aurora Borus RPG from Warchief Gaming.
Okay.
We talked about them when they first launched. Dante's Inferno for 5e. And a little interesting piece of trivia about Wizards of the Coast and D&D.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, this first story, this was a very short-lived Kickstarter. So there was a RPG, mm-hmm. a tabletop RPG, inspired by the kind of action shooter, the free online action shooter Warframe.
Right.
And it got a little confused. I think the creator themselves wasn't clear how to approach this, and the fandom or kind of the fan base of the online game immediately attacked.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it seemed, I don't think he had a clear way to present what he was doing, present it as a fan project, because you do get those people stealing IPs on Kickstarter and trying to, you know, run something through and say, oh, yeah, yeah, we'll the money we raise for this Kickstarter will pay for the license for the, And this was a fan project, basically, and it was represented that way, inspired by, you know, basically. And so the designer Spencer Campbell launched a Kickstarter called Frame, and it was a tabletop RPG love letter to Warframe. And that was launched on March 13th. And then about just a few hours later, within a few hours, he canceled the project because he was immediately attacked. They added the studio that produces Warframe and said, they're stealing your stuff. And so, yeah, I think there was a misunderstanding. And I think, did you see
this? Well, us being in Japan, mm-hmm. and me following a lot of like the game designers on Twitter, usually those people are in North America.
Right.
The vast majority. So usually when stuff goes down, mm-hmm. we're asleep. Right.
You wake
so
up.
I caught the tail end of this, but I follow Spencer Campbell on Twitter and had been following the development of Frame for a while,
mm-hmm.
because I believe this was either connected to another project they made on Itch or kind of like done like the Itch funding thing where like you kind of get pre-releases or earlier sales of the game kind of mm-hmm. help fund a finished version.
Right.
I know nothing about Warframe other than it has mechs
mm-hmm.
and that it's free. But like following this person, the creator, for a while before they even started this project, I knew they were working on kind of a TTRPG love letter to mm-hmm. Warframe.
Mm-hmm.
From what I read, kind of after the fact, after it got taken down, or after it got not taken down, canceled.
Right.
The only, not even a fault of Spencer Campbell, but the only thing they said that could possibly have happened was the artist they had either hired or tapped mm-hmm. to create art for Frame was produced stuff very close to Warframe. And I think they said in hindsight that may have given people the impression or more of an impression that this was ripping off mm-hmm. Warframe when it was inspired by rather than a tabletop version of. So I kind of think this is a real example of shitty fandom.
Yeah, I think they were too eager to attack. And I mean, I think when it is a free-to-play online game, and basically if you've been playing this through its whole development, because it's been around for a while now.
Oh, Warframe?
Yeah.
That's my impression as well.
Yeah, and it's really developed into something amazing. And the story and the setting and everything are really fleshed out. And it's just, I mean, they really managed to do a good job. And I don't think they've actually sold out to Chinese funding or anything like a lot of the other free-to-play have. So it's really, I think the people that like it are really loyal to it. But still, you can be inspired by something and not be stealing. But I think you're right. I think that's what happened is he hired a fan artist that was too good. their style was too close to the original style, wasn't graphically distinct, but looked beautiful. So it seemed like, because what you have a lot of time when someone is stealing an IP, they actually steal assets.
Right.
They steal art assets and they copy paste text and things. So you know that they're actually, you know, hijacking something and there's no original production. This is original production, but maybe too close to the original. There wasn't enough of this is inspired, it's this, but with this, you know, just enough to separate it. So it's sad, and it wasn't a huge, it was a $2,500dollar Kickstarter. So the goal was very modest. It wasn't a big deal, but, you know, it just struck fans the wrong way.
Which is unfortunate. I guess what I was going to say is I don't know anything about Warframe other than it is a free-to-play game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought about checking it out just because it's a free-to-play game, but I can't play video games.
Yeah, it's great. It's amazing. It's really fast. It's like an action shooter kind of combat. You can like stealth the whole thing, and it's kind of like the theme is ninja. So your suit, your kind of biomechanical suit, is ninja based. So you can stealth or you can brute force your way. A lot of different types of suits, so it's classes to play.
Interesting.
So
I can't say how close the like character options or style or even anything of Frame was to Warframe. So I can't comment on like that aspect.
Right.
But it is just like real crappy result.
The creator
was harassed to the point that they decided for their own mental health to cancel this project.
Yes, yes.
And as we're going to talk about D&D later on, because you can't fucking escape that goddamn TTRPG gorilla. Like, it stinks that like an indie, kind of like small independent project like this was just crushed by toxic online fandom. And you're just like,
right.
Really?
Yeah. And yeah, there's a really interesting, because, you know, we talked about gatekeeping before, and they use that word kind of toxic, you know, because John and I are going to talk about the Snyder Cut later.
Ooh.
So there's some fandom that's been labeled toxic that actually brought a movie back from the dead. Yeah. So I don't know. But it's a difficult thing because that needs to exist. I think there needs to be people that really have a lot of loyalty to a brand to support it. But the way they decide to defend it, the way they said it to protect it, I think can be dangerous because, you know, death threats and, you know, threatening to, you know, go after, you know, assets or your job or whatever, because they did something in a style that you don't like or too close to something that's very the reaction is just, you know, just like we're talking about, that a lot of times the punishment or the reaction does not merit, you know, what was done does not merit that kind of response.
Yeah.
And people are just more than willing to go for, you know, from 0 to 100 and really, you know, want to thrash somebody to, you know, protect something they feel.
Well, it's all kind of tied into the, I'm figuring out how to say it. And it's not the replacement of a personality with a brand, but it's kind of like, you know, the thinking that something you enjoy is kind of yours and part of your personality and kind of needing to defend that. And I kind of understand it because, I mean, I put the book up on the table because I'm going to be running a game in a couple weeks. But I remember like when Alien came out and after we played it and liking it so much and then seeing a couple of people going, no, not really. Or like, why? And me wanting to go like, and like, stop myself and going, doesn't matter.
Right.
So I'm not saying
they
I'm
were
perfect.
Insulting you though. Actually,
no, that's the thing. Like, I can understand or at least empathize feeling like something is wrong and kind of wanting to defend something you like.
Right.
But not to that degree. Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think there is a value. You know, there is a value to some gatekeeping, some fandom, the way that things operate to kind of, you know, bring people in. I think when there are kind of people shepherding you, this is really great. You should see this, you know, check this out. I think that works well. But yeah, it's really sad. And the creator actually said, to be clear, this project wasn't canceled due to copyright issues. This project was canceled due to a campaign of harassment.
Right.
So there was no involvement by the original creator, who is Digital Extreme, is the studio. I think they're based in Canada, the studio that produces Warframe. So, you know, people were sending them.
Snitch tagging.
Yeah, right. All sorts of information, and they never responded. And so I don't know. I wonder if, like, in this sort of situation, you know, he would have been helped to just talk to them first and say, I'm doing a fan thing just in case this kind of reaction happened. I think that might be because they're not a huge studio. This isn't a publicly traded, you know, studio that's going to say, no, you know, you don't play with us at all.
Right. I don't. It's hard to say because I don't know anything that goes on behind the scenes. But I know that, or I've heard that in like movies, you know, sometimes like movie studios, just they don't look at unsolicited pitches just in the off chance that they make something that ends up being similar to someone else's. And then that person can kind of, well, you read it, so you must have. So maybe it was better just for the company to just kind of not respond or not do anything at all. I don't know if that's the case, but then I understand maybe wanting to contact people if you're going to make a game kind of inspired by it. But like, if that's the case, how many games out there are inspired by other things? And it's like, it kind of seems like a massive hurdle that people would have to to jump over to do this kind of stuff. So I don't know. I kind of understand. Oh yeah, maybe I should do this, but at the same time, that kind of seems like a slippery slope.
Oh yeah,
like where does that end, or where where can you say this is distinct enough that I don't have to contact anyone?
Yeah.
And do I want to be bothering these people by contacting them?
Right,
I talk my hands a lot, and I'm glad that logo is there. It's all, yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and it's and it probably didn't even occur to the designer, you know, that things were going to go that way, and it was going to be interpreted as that close. And there's also that thing. It's probably. You know, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
I forget how it goes, I know the
So beg for forgiveness and ask for permission, because
in some things, things.
Yeah, but and I think it's just unfortunate. And so we'll see. We'll see what happens if this can actually, if they can kind of like re-theme this or take make that inspiration
else,
and kind of make it into another world. And because the way the kind of way that people kind of just they'll take something, be inspired by it, and kind of reshape it, reform it, kind of just they're sampling it, basically.
Yeah.
And that's a legitimate form that's existed for a long time. So, of course, in game design, that would have to be a thing. Well, a game that isn't canceled yet, as far as we know, is Ouroboros, an RPG. This is actually
that's the snake eating its tail, right?
Yeah, but it's spelled wrong. I think they did it maybe for copy, like trademark reasons.
Okay.
They can trademark that word, but it's spelled with an A, and it's usually either an O or an OU.
Yeah,
so,
that's what I thought. Yeah,
yeah. So Google will be correcting you every time you look for this game. But it's a setting. So we talked about Warchief. So this is former execs from Blizzard. So the creators.
Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of Warcraft, World of Warcraft creators, and.
Emergency.
And so their setting, their original setting that they're working on for 5e is Ouroboros, Coils of the Serpent.
Okay, I have heard of this. Okay.
Yes, yes. So a fantasy RPG inspired by their D&D campaigns. And so this is Chris Metzen, who was the co-owner, is co-owner of Warchief and one of the execs from Blizzard, kind of the one that established a lot of what we know as that, kind of Warcraft setting. And so they're working on new subclasses, unique to the setting. They want to enable players to tap into this power of the world serpent. So they're using, this idea of, but the interesting thing is, it says the system raises questions that ask you, what do you do if one of your party members actually becomes the storyline's supervillain? So this serpent's power, this world serpent's power that you can tap into, it sounds like it's a corrupting power.
Okay.
So it's like they're like kind of doing the dangerous magic kind of system.
Okay.
And so that's kind of the idea. And one of their examples of the new subclasses is a Wrathblade, which is a vampiric rogue. So trying to style it, maybe kind of darker styling. And this is based on, it sounds like, everything that they're doing is based on gaming that they've done. So this is kind of like their world building, their stuff they've done in either in war games or tabletop RPGs that they now want to produce. So this will be a Kickstarter for the World Book Law brand. Will be the name of the World Book setting, and that'll launch April 20th. So yeah, so they are doing something, because I think we had a question of like,
if they would do anything.
They said the way, because I think that corporate speak or that kind of studio speak that they launched Warchief Gaming with, you're like, what? We're a world of creativity, and they're like, and what are you going to be doing?
Can we get
that?
Some solid stuff with that?
Right.
Fluff.
So now we have. So now we've seen this. So I'm curious to see the reaction and if this has the flavor of Warcraft, and that's kind of, that may kind of pull some people. Yeah.
Linking it back to a previous discussion, would it be able to have the flavor of Warcraft? Because they're ex-Blizzard, right?
Yes,
they're
yes,
no
yes.
longer Blizzard.
Right,
so
right.
If they did make it too similar to Warcraft, wouldn't Blizzard be able to go, knock that the fuck off?
If they said, if basically they ripped off Warhammer Fantasy, which is what Warcraft ripped off.
Yeah.
I think if it got too close, it sounds like they're really going grimmer, darker, It's trying to be distinct.
Because the gaming world needs more of those settings.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And yeah, and as a source book for 5e, I think that, yeah, they're not pitching it as a, it's not, it's an original game system or anything. So
that's because when we talked about it earlier, I thought they would come out with their own game.
I thought so too, yeah. But maybe it's
a lot safer to,
yeah.
I don't agree with it, but it's a lot safer to make a, hey, here's a 5e thing, because already the world's most popular role-playing game. So we're kind of giving, we're building ourselves an audience with this. You know, there's an established one.
Yeah.
Just make it, there you go. Easier than trying to get people to change over to an actual, or easier than trying to get some people to change over to a new system.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And they're probably trying to slot in. It might be just based on their gaming experience as well. Maybe they just started playing 5e and stuck with it. Like they never jumped systems. And so, yeah, so they figured, why don't we just make this a source book for it? Yeah, but we'll talk about, there's some interesting numbers we'll talk about in a little bit about 5e. For another setting for 5e, which you may enjoy because maybe all 5e feels like this for you, is Dante's Inferno. So there is an Italian studio that's going to do Dante's Guide to Hell for 5e. So Inferno is the first original Dante-esque campaign setting for 5th edition, which the studio calls the most important RPG ever created.
If you're referring to D&D as a whole,
right.
I guess I can't really argue with that
definition.
Right. I also can't argue with the definition of it being the most popular
role-playing
game, just based on numbers. Sucks, but anyway, I don't know. I'll have to go. No, you know what? I won't go look at this because it's D&D 5e, and I don't particularly care. But like, there have been any number of adventures or campaign scenarios set in hell. Maybe not like the Dante's Inferno thing. So by that marker, okay, you're right. It's the first Dante's Inferno. But I wonder, like, how are you going to make it different from other hell settings? Because like, unless you go through all, what, 7 levels of whatever hell in like Dante's Inferno, like, okay, as a setting, that could be cool, where here's your 7 distinct layers and each one kind of represents a different thing and has different things going on.
Right, right.
What do you do with that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because you are just like, oh, this is very accurate to the original text. Okay, is it fun? Yeah,
yeah, great. Right, so we're going to descend through those 7 levels following the same path that Dante did. Like, is that fun?
Right.
I mean,
right.
7 little could potentially be 7 little mini worlds, right? Where that are all doing different things, and I guess you could travel between them. But I mean, what would the player characters be, and what would they do?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think a couple of game companies have already approached this, have kind of, you know, and even kind of hinting at the fact that you could play this after your characters, like if there's a total party kill, now you can take those same characters, you know, maybe
we all know D&D adventurers would end up in hell.
Yeah, they all at the same time. So I think this is just kind of expanding on that same kind of idea, but giving it a literary source. Okay. And this is Acheron Books, which is based in Milan, Italy, and they are producing this. This has kind of been coordinated over the past 3 years. This has been developed to time it with the 700th anniversary of Dante's death. Yeah, the death anniversary of Dante Alighieri's death. So that's pretty.
That's
funny
pretty cool.
That they did that. Yeah, and if it's got some, I mean, it's an Italian studio, and so the flavor will have some legitimacy. They did. I think there was a video game, Dante's Inferno video game, and they just kind of just themed everything. Oh, now there's babies that you kill, and so they themed it based on very literal things. It sounds interesting because they're gonna produce 2 books. Dante's Guide to Hell, which will kind of, you know, be the setting and the rules. So character creation and new rules for the setting. And then basically Virgil's, they use the Italian name, though, Virgilio's Untold Tales. So Virgil's Untold Tales, which will be their Game Master's Guide and Monster Manual, basically. Kind of say what's in that.
It's going to be a lot of demons.
Right. So perils and game hooks and special equipment and things for the campaign. So it sounds interesting because the characters that you're playing are lost ones. You know, you're kind of, just the souls, the damned souls of your previous characters. So that'll change the abilities, and people have done interesting things with that already, like what that would mean to have your, you know, mortality taken away or be a damned soul, like how magic and other things work because of that. But so I thought that was a funny thing to see. So 12 new archetypes in this setting and set for levels 1 to 20 for 5e.
Well, I will have to go look at it.
Yeah, it looks like it's got beautiful art, and that's the thing you kind of assume. If it's going to be an Italian studio, they've got good taste and they've got access to good artisan designers. So it looks really beautiful. But so we'll see. So I thought that was just funny and appropriate for your fandom of of 5e. It's like, what the hell version?
Turning it into 5e cast. Wow. Next episode, only Jeremy, because we got WotC sponsorship.
Yeah, right.
I just can't be here anymore.
Well, if you'd like to this is a fun fact for you to think about and make you feel even worse about this whole 5e thing. It is now official. Wizards of the Coast has owned Dungeons & Dragons longer than TSR.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it just kind of happened. So 24 years since WotC bought D&D in 97. But oddly enough, then they were bought by Hasbro in 99. So it was very short lived. Like the Wizards of the Coast actually independently developing without any like Hasbro interference. Developing D&D, and it was only 23 years that TSR controlled D&D. Okay. Yeah, from 74. Yeah, if you count 74 as the creation date. So that's pretty funny. And then so that made me think, you're always... They always have those, you know, we're further away from this date than this date. It's like, start to get this weird perspective about how time works and how long things have been around. So that made me think about some other kind of stats for Dungeons and Dragons. And when they were doing in 2020, they kind of did stats. And I think this is mostly based on virtual tabletop. Okay. They can't like send out, surveys to everyone in every game club. But they were saying 40% of D&D players are under 25. So it's become maybe it's stayed a young hobby. You know, I think the over 40s, which is like, you know, kind of the original fans, is 11%. So it's a pretty small, it's a pretty small group. So you can see why there's, you know, kind of people wanting it to evolve and wanting to see different things out of it, and why original players are just like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Why would you possibly do this? But it's a smaller group than I imagined.
Well, like we said, or rather like you said, it was probably mostly, if not solely, online. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking to myself, I have no time to do online gaming. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I have no time to myself to do anything. So even if I did want to play D&D, I don't have time to do that. Mm. Whereas like under 24, like I'm not saying you have no responsibilities because that sounds really ignorant of me, but thinking about what I was in university, like pull all-nighters, playing all kinds of games, doing all sorts of stuff. Yeah, so no, like you have... True. Yeah, go for it. So,
and I think definitely university has had a big effect on that. I think that the popularity is coming from that, you know, the live streamer, the online age, and also universities. So they're saying, I don't know how they came up with this estimate, because this is probably just a rough guess, but they're saying of the estimated 40 million players, 39% identify as female. So that's, I mean, compared to what that 11% of over 40s experience. I mean, there was a rare woman at the table, rare female identifying person at a gaming table when I was growing up. It was hard to coerce anybody to think that was fun.
Yeah, but I wonder, like, I don't have any hard numbers or hard examples, but kind of like thinking about now, how there's a fair number of articles and kind of blog posts and kind of the hidden history of women in whatever fields,
right.
It's not that they weren't there or didn't exist. It's just that they kind of got written out of stuff or ignored engaging in the group that were kind of writing all this stuff. So I'm not surprised by that number. Like, I wonder, who knows? Maybe that number has been constant since the existence of D&D, and we just kind of don't know about it.
That's a really good point. Yeah, because when we were the history of Blackmore, kind of the Secrets of Blackmore video, when we were talking to the director, he was very eager to point out, you know, look at how many people's spouses and girlfriends and daughters were involved in early Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, all of the, you know, every one of the pages of rules was typed by someone's wife.
Right.
You know, so it was like they were intimately involved in, you know, kind of the creation and kind of always present. But it's interesting how, and I wonder when that happened, when it kind of became more identified, because even in, you know, the 70s and 80s, there were plenty of girls that were into, you know, weird fantasy books and stuff. So obviously that would be an easy step into tabletop role playing. But the image and my experience just as
you
know, preteen and, you know, kind of teenager is, yeah, you couldn't get any any girls even slightly interested.
Again, it's one of those things like, okay, is that because they had no interest in the game, which I do not think is the case, or they just kind of... I was going to sound real bad and like I'm insulting you, but like it applies to like me as well. Like, did they not want to associate with the people who were doing this, you know? And not necessarily because they didn't like it. It's just like,
yeah.
thinking about like a conversation I had with John and how it's just nice. We haven't played in a long time, or it feels that way, but it's kind of like nice to be in the current group we are because we feel a lot freer to just talk about certain stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just leaving it vague like that. But like, applying that to other people and like the number of conversations I've seen with like black gamers or people of color saying it's a lot more comfortable to play with these other groups because we don't have to worry about all this other bullshit. So that's not me saying they didn't want to associate with us. That's me saying that maybe they just preferred playing with themselves more. Right. And we kind of,
that's true. And we missed that or just weren't included in that because, you know, everybody had sleepovers. So you don't know what exactly they were doing in their pajamas. They could have all been role playing.
Playing D&D, yeah.
But no, I think that's a good point. And it does change the dynamic. You know, groups that are mixed a certain way do change the dynamic and people pay certain attention or they kind of like, you know, guard themselves or just socially they, you know, become a lot more awkward. So, yeah, I think that it's very... that's very true. But yeah, it's very interesting. So our, you know, what we are, these weird stereotypes that tabletop role playing, you know, has, and even it's still how it's portrayed.
It
was still portrayed in, you know, movies and television that way. You know, it's not true. And I wonder when that's actually going to change, you know, when people are actually going to say, oh yeah, all, you know, people on the internet aren't nerds. All, you know, people playing tabletop games aren't geeks. Like, you know, that, where it's going to kind of break away and be it's normal, you know, just the same with like online dating and stuff. It's like, what? Met on the internet, you sickos. You know, it's like, now that's just like, that's the only way that people meet now. Yeah. So it's a it's, you know, those things evolve in a very funny way. So those numbers, yeah, just were very funny to hear. But if we jump back a little bit further, not before the 70s, I'm talking 2014, a little bit beyond today. The year that 5e was released, when you looked at those tabletop stats, Pathfinder dominated everything. It was basically Pathfinder, then versions of, you know, then maybe Call of Cthulhu, and then versions of D&D 4 and 3.5.
Fifth edition couldn't have come out in 2014, did it?
I think it started like the free PDF.
Because
they did the starter set, the free PDF, the starter set, and people were like books, and it's towards the end of 2014, and maybe that's why it's such a low number.
Interesting.
Like, why Pathfinder was still beating it.
Probably because D&D or WotC had abandoned 4E. So
So it was a very different landscape, and now you look at those same stats, and it's just like boom, 5E, just like sits at the top. So yeah, very very funny how quickly that changed and how Paizo lost, you know, market share. Yeah.
Well, again, I mean, I'm not going to go to bat for Pathfinder, just like I'm not going to go to bat for D&D 5e or D&D or anything. But like, what other game has the just pop culture saturation that D&D does? Nothing.
Right. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You're not going to Target or Walmart or like bookstore here and picking up a Pathfinder book or any other book. True. No, it's D&D, so it's the Kleenex of RPGs, and I don't mean that in a derogatory term, but I kind of do. But like, it just is like that's the name of the game. So any number you put up where it's like D&D's dominating, I'm like, and is there really any other outcome from that?
So what do you think? Does that have an effect? Because we play a lot of, you know,
not
kind D&D? Of like non-D&D, like a lot of alternative systems, a lot of different, and things that aren't even necessarily that inspired by D&D, like a lot more storytelling and a lot more, you know, the there's not so much flexibility or range in the outcome of things. Like, right. You know, dice rolls and things are more mitigated, and it's more about the narrative. Do you think that you know, crushing the rest of that market share into that smaller, has that changed like how independent RPG studios and stuff, like how they approach things? Like, are they trying to, you know, market more specifically to certain types of players? Maybe. Because you can't generally, you can't go after a general player because the general player is already stuck in the D&D net, you know, before they even get to you.
I think there's kind of like two ways to go about it. Let me just check my time here.
Oh, sure.
I think I got a couple more minutes. Like, one, like we just kind of talked about, those what, two new settings coming out for D&D 5e.
Mm-hmm.
So you can either kind of go for the game with the built-in audience.
Right.
Or I think you kind of do a complete 180 and go, no, we're going to laser focus on kind of this demographic or people who like this style of game better and just not worry about courting those D&D players.
Right. Yeah, so it's interesting. And I've seen some people try to, like Trudvang is doing this. Riot Minds is doing a 5e version of their already established, has been around for decades, you know, RPG system. They're going to, that setting, they're porting it to 5e to hopefully get people to say, yeah, and if you don't really like 5e, we do have this original system that we've been playing for a long time. It's a little crunchier, a little more complicated, but maybe, you know, maybe that is more to your taste. So yeah, it's interesting how people are approaching, either ignoring or, you know, trying to somehow use that popularity to get players. Yeah.
I think you kind of have to.
Yeah. Interesting. So what is on the table here?
Oh, on the table is Free League's Alien RPG, which is still, I think, one of my favorite games of all time.
Nice.
And now that the state of emergency has been lifted, perhaps not for any good reason, I think I'll be running a session of it on April 14th.
Oh, nice.
Which, look, it's like last time I ran it was August 2019, jeez, which was like ages ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'll probably be doing Chariot of the Gods again, because where that group left off with Chariot of the Gods, I said, there's a lot that could still happen.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And a lot that they kind of didn't interact with. And there's very still a very large human presence on the Kronos.
Yes. Oh.
So
nice.
What I've done is I've elevated the crew of the Sotillo I'm going to elevate them to full PCs. And so now the second group is going to, which I think is all new players.
Yes.
Is going to be the crew of the Mercenary Sotillo going in to the Kronos after the crew of the Montero has already gone in.
Nice. So they're kind of in the state that the previous
campaign
left.
Because I'm like going back and I remember, oh, that's right. Nice. That's what had just happened. This is who's here and who's here and stuff like that. And thanks to that PDF you made.
Oh, yes.
I made a Siegson.
Oh, nice.
It's hard to see, but it's a Siegson synthetics character sheet.
Oh, they're not Wailing Tongues. Oh, very cool.
And what I've done before, here's your Siegson synthetic name tags.
Nice.
Because I really liked giving people, and it's not going to stand up, I really liked giving the players name tags for the role and just saying, here's the character choices.
Right.
Pick
one. Yeah.
And then hand out the character sheets. I think that worked really well.
Especially because it's corpse.
And you wear it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that works really well. And because it's like, kind of, you know, players that maybe haven't played before, not an established group, it's good that you can keep character names, you know, straight, not have the pressure of, what was your name again?
Yeah. Just like put it on and then no one forgets the character name, or it's real easy to find out.
That's really cool. I'll have to get a report on how that went. That sounds like that's a brilliant idea to continue.
Because there's a really good campaign. If you just tweak stuff a little bit, there's a pretty, you can give them a pretty strong reason, the crew of the Sotillo, to go in. I am going to make a few tweaks. First off, the mechanic is not a kid,
because
I'm not going to have a 12-year-old walking into the Kronos with all the stuff that goes on, because that's just, like, I know we have Newt in the movies, but she kind of had plot immunity.
Right.
Well, until Alien 3. But, like, you know, just, and it all kind of happened off screen, but, like, not doing that. And I'm debating whether or not to give the crew of the Sotillo compression suits.
Oh, interesting.
Because that could either, like, make end things real fast, or not providing them could give a lot of motivation to do stuff once they figure out what's going on.
Right.
Spoilers. What's going on? It's not nice.
So what condition were there any repairs done to the Kronos?
There were no repairs done to the Kronos. No repairs done to the Kronos. Okay, spoilers. Most of the Kronos crew is dead because the last encounter with a Neomorph just wiped a bunch of the NPCs. the Montero pilot bugged out on the EEV after failing an empathy roll and leaving the corporate agent and one of the roughnecks behind with a Kronos crew member who's about to turn into one of those monster things.
Right.
Just went, okay, empathy roll, corporate agent made it, meaning they had to stay aboard, and pilot just went, fuck you all, I'm out of here. Wow. So I think I'm going to give the crew of the Sotillo an option to be like, okay, the Sotillo hung back.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the Montero explode for no reason you can see. There goes an EEV.
Right, right.
What are you going to do? So, like, maybe they're going to catch the EEV and mm-hmm. bring the pilot aboard, or maybe they're just going to go aboard and see what's going on.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's still living Montero crew members.
Mm-hmm.
There's still, like, one or two living Kronos crew members. They also didn't interact with Ava at all.
Oh.
So you have a synthetic.
Yes.
Excellent scene of just like banging against right. the wall with all these little origami animals yeah. everywhere.
Right.
And they've done no repairs to the Kronos.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so
yeah. That's a good state to pick
yeah,
up,
there's yeah. a lot that could happen. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Sotillo hasn't blown up means that you can still get off.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
very cool. Wow. Well, yeah.
Spoilers for Chariot of the Gods.
Yes.
And if anyone playing the game watched that, I'm sorry I spoiled everything for you. But yeah, leaving the state of the game as it was said, you could do a lot more with this. Mm.
That's really brilliant. Yeah, it's a good idea. And then you're coming at that same situation from a totally fresh party,
yeah.
totally different eyes. So yeah, really fun. Cool. Any players the same from the
groups? Not from the groups,
oh,
I think.
Cool.
So yeah, that'll be Excellent. Completely new.
Very
yeah.
cool. Well, where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always. That's HiveMind, HYVEMYND, where I talked about my computer almost went belly up making those things because I distressed it way too much and my poor machine couldn't handle it. It's like, yeah. Anyway.
Nice. Are you going to make those available? Like, are you
I probably will.
Set? Okay, cool. Yeah, so we'll put links to that when that happens.
Finish.
And yeah, yeah, keep an update. Yeah, yeah, keep us updated on that. So, thanks for watching. If you'd like to support this podcast, please visit idleredhands.com and also the Patreon, patreon.com/idleredhands, to become a weakling and give us some support.
Still hilarious.
And a big thank you to Joe from last week, his very generous super chat in our last
Ooh,
session.
Yeah, nice.
So yeah, thank you very much, Joe. And I will be seeing you in the chat. So that's all for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.